Hi, I'm Andrew Keith Walker.
Hello, I'm Barbara Reith.
Hi, I'm Laura Rodriguez.
Hi, I'm John Kernan.
Hi, I'm Nick Bruce.
And this is the number one regulatory reporting podcast in the EU, the UK, and around the world. So join us as we go behind the scenes and under the hood to look at the big issues and news stories, companies and personalities who are shaping the world of RegTech, FinTech, and trade repositories. Welcome to the RegisTR Roundup. And remember, this podcast is brought to you by RegisTR, which is a six company and features members of the RegisTR team and special guests offering their personal opinions, not the opinions of RegisTR as an organization. There is no representation made as to the accuracy or completeness of information in this podcast, nor should you take it as legal, tax, or other professional advice. And welcome back to the RegisTR Roundup. Yes, we are back with another very special show for you today. A different show again this week because we are meeting up with Urs Reich, who is the head of public affairs for the Six Group. And of course, this means we can't do the show without our very own Pride of Spain, the head of international relations, Laura Rodriguez as well, who is joining us here as well. Laura, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Andrew. How are you? Long time we have not seen each other.
I know. Now for regular listeners to the show, we have done 80 episodes plus now. We're very, very excited to have Laura back. She's normally a regular member of the virtual studio crew and has been here giving us the inside information on relationships with ESMA and with regulators and NCBs across the EU over the years. But you've been very busy recently, haven't you? Because, of course, EMIR Refit is coming on strong now. We're only, 6 months away? It's April. It's coming in. So it's really not long to go. How have things been? You've been a bit too busy to be on the show.
Yeah, but actually I have a great excuse. We have lately visiting some of the authorities that, have been also very involved in EMIR Refit. So yeah, we needed to have their view also, share our points of view, our challenges, and see how the market participants are doing to ensure that by next year, April, we all are full in production. So yeah, busy months discussing with them and happy to give you an update maybe in another call, another conversation about it.
Sure. Well, it's good to have you here and also to meet more of your team because you've been representing the public affairs side of the business here on the show for years. But joining us today, we are delighted to say someone who probably needs very little introduction if you've been working in and around the world of public affairs. If you know the Six Group, or you've been involved in anything really in the Swiss market, you will, of course, know Urs Reich, who is joining us here. Urs, as well, I've got to start by saying, just before we dive in, I was looking at your CV, which is, of course, very impressive. You know, over 16 years working in public affairs. But you started out working in public affairs for the national sports team. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And no, it's wrong. Actually, that was voluntary work that I was head of media for the Swiss bobsleigh team. So it wasn't a full-time job or anything like that. It was part-time outside of the working time. But yes, it's true. And it was fun and it was very enriching.
Now, I've got to say, just, you know, anyone who watches sports and has to, you know, see sportsmen getting interviewed by the media, or anyone like myself, I've interviewed a few sportsmen over the years. It's a difficult job because sports fans can be some of the best fans in the world, but also they can be very unforgiving. So it must be a tough PR and public relations and public affairs job to keep sports fans happy, because especially around something as passionate as bobsleigh, which is, let's face it, it's a big deal, especially in countries that excel at winter sports like Switzerland.
Yes, it was. On the one hand, it was hard time because, as you say, people are passionate about it, and it's all about fulfilling their wishes, etc. But it was my passion, so I did what I loved to do, and I could be closest to some great sportsmen and sportswomen, and that was so much fun. And it was also that I learned a lot in these. Doing these things.
Now, also, I have to ask you, just as a side point, did you ever do the bobsleigh run? Have you ever bobsleighed?
Well, not as a pilot, but as a passenger. So there is the possibility to sit on the bobsleigh as a passenger, like on a taxi ride. It's also called a taxi ride. There is a professional pilot in front of you. And there is a semi-professional brakeman behind, and in the middle there are two passengers. And I did both. I was passenger, but sometimes I was also the semi-professional brakesman.
Okay, and was that down the Cresta Run, one of those classic courses?
No, the Cresta Run, that is for the British gentleman doing skeleton riding. That was the traditional bob run in St. Moritz that I did, and also... I did one or two outside of Switzerland, but primarily in St. Moritz.
And it looks quite terrifying on the TV. I mean, for a man, for a larger middle-aged gentleman such as myself, it looks like a one-way ticket to the morgue. You've clearly survived and done incredibly well on that. Is it scary?
I would say the first time it is scary. We always told people you need to do it twice because the first time you will not remember because it's... It can be quite scary. But the second time, if you know what to expect, then it gets really funny and that makes a lot of sense. And I did it roughly 100 times. And therefore, I could enjoy it.
Okay, 100. Wow, 100 times. Okay, I have to say now, I am intrigued. I would really like to have a go at that. Laura, what about yourself? Have you ever done any sort of extreme sports?
I do Pilates, you know, it's not the same. Oh, no.
You see, well, but the Pilates, of course, that's how you manage the stress with dealing with a sudden sudden increase in data fields that no one was expecting or a failure in the ISO syntax. So we can come to that later on. I want to start off with a serious chat, though, about this, Urs, because, you know, the reason I'm asking you about, obviously, 100 bobsleigh runs, high-stress situations, is when you came into... financial public affairs. It was around the time, or just after the financial crisis, of course, 2008. So you have steered financial institutions in a public affairs sense through some very difficult times over the last 13 years. What is the core of a good, successful, sustainable public affairs team?
At SIX, I'm heading public affairs and market structure, which is a function consisting of the two teams giving it its name. And we do three things mainly. First of all, we monitor political and regulatory developments based on the requirements of SIX as a company. Secondly, we advise business and also senior management regarding developments, trends, impacts, and opportunities. Of course, also the risks. And then we exert influence on topics that are relevant, both directly and indirectly. This means, A, we are ourselves in contact with the political stakeholders or by our industry groups. And this also means that we are also responsible for managing the industry groups as far as they have a political angle or a lobbying angle. And in terms of organization, as I said, we are two teams. Market structure is more on the... Focusing on the regulated entities, both in our business units, exchanges and security services, and they are also managing the relationships with the industry groups. And then on the other hand, public affairs has a strong focus on the contacts with the political stakeholders and is also very active in positioning our senior management in this respect and are also preparing our presence in high-level conferences and events which have a policy angle, not the marketing ones, but those which have a policy angle. For example, Eurofee, the huge lobbying conference for financial services that takes place twice a year, just last week in Santiago de Compostela, or then in Switzerland, the Point Zero conference, which is a huge gathering between the industry, mainly from Switzerland and Singapore or APEC region, but also Europe, and policymakers. And they are also covering what we call corporate topical, like, for example, the AI Act or the Data Act, these things. But of course, both are heavily linked and are working together hand in hand on the different topics and tasks. And finally, probably it's worth noting that with my colleagues being based in Switzerland, Spain and the UK, we of course focus on these three jurisdictions and the EU level, but also keep a close eye on what's going on outside of Europe in order that we don't miss any important development which might have an impact on SIX.
Now, that's a point where I'd like to bring Laura in, of course, because, Laura, the audience know you as the head of institutional relations for RegisTR. You've been a regular member of the crew, but this is a chance for us to see a little bit more of the work that you do. Now, do you work on the markets side of the PAM team?
Okay, let's start to allocate the institutional relations team where it is right now. So the main core activities that we do at the institutional relations team is the contact with the authorities, because we need to provide them a direct line of communication with us to ensure that the data that they received is correct, that they don't have any problem, and they can use properly that data to perform their supervisory activities. So we have at RegisTR a large number of authorities connected to RegisTR. So the constant discussions with them and questions that we receive is high, and that's what helps us also to ensure that we are compliant with the regulation vis-a-vis the authorities. But of course, in addition to that, we have an important role as public affairs, because in particular, we have a new regulatory requirements, and we had many constantly, and there is an impact in the TR activity. We gather perform the internal analysis to understand what are our impacts, our concern, or if there is any initiative that we can take. And we gather that information and we share it with the financial industry, with the goal to define common positions for the benefits not only of the TRs, but also for our clients. And in particular, to make our voices stronger, because at the end, TRs, there are very, very few, and we have all our requirements very well defined in the regulation, so we don't have many flexibility. But if we arrive on time, if we do this analysis and we get into the discussion early on time, and we see that we can benefit from a discussion with working groups, with strong responses to consultation paper or to discussion papers, we can position our view, and we can shape that political positioning. So it's important that we are always on time and to take that role of raise our voice as a TR and having a common view and share it with the market.
Now, Urs, on that front, I'm just having a look down the list of international industry organizations that SIX is involved with. And we're talking about ISLA, ISDA, ICMA, SWIFT, multiple partnerships operating, obviously, across the whole of the EU, the UK, internationally, with the US as well. It's a very complex picture. So what's a typical project cycle like for your team? I mean, how do you collaborate with so many different stakeholders and bring it all together in a sort of timely fashion to actually deliver the sort of reporting and guidance and also achieve a public position for an organization like SIX?
Usually starts when first ideas about the regulation surface, and we start to investigate what it's all about, and also that's when monitoring starts. And then once we have more clarity over the context and the content, we will discuss with our first of all with our internal stakeholders, like Laura and others, whether and to what extent this new issue might matter to SIX and its businesses. A next step is then, if relevant and necessary, to define and adopt the SIX position and to agree on the necessary measures. This includes identifying responses to the following questions: which external stakeholders need to be addressed, by whom, in what way, with which exact messages, and when. And basically, as I said, we differentiate and also are we doing it directly ourselves or via the industry groups? And you named the many industry groups that we are participating in. And there it is also about coordinating which body is doing what and how. And of course, we are not the only ones. And as Laura said, we need to then be in that constant dialogue with our peers, with all the stakeholders, in order to hopefully bring together a broad alliance that pushes into the same direction. The broader, the better. Depending on the matter at hand, we then decide, do we use only direct advocacy, perhaps because we couldn't form an alliance and we are on our own, or we do it solely through the industry groups, or it's in most cases, it's a mix of both. This is also the reason why it is so important that we are present in these industry groups, because only if we are there and can represent our position, we can try to push them into the, or to, we can try to bring them in a direction that is favorable for us. And also we get a lot of information from there, because we get to know the position from other stakeholders and can factor that in. And for that is the reason why my team is sometimes present in the working groups, but more often than not, it's the subject matter expert from the business who are there and represent their interests. And then the role of my team is bringing the different positions together, also from the industry groups, and bringing all together and coordinate whenever we see that there might be a conflict or a difference in between.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that final point there, because I think one of the issues that comes up time and again now, I've heard on the conference circuit as I've been attending events, and as we're recording this, of course, Cybos is happening right now over in Toronto. There was a big event yesterday that Register CR were at, of course, talking about EMEA refit and updating there, and there's been a sequence of them. Do you think that in an industry where now we're post-COVID and everyone's coming back together for the live event scene, that perhaps public affairs teams can get spread a little bit too thin, because there are simply so many events and so many RegTech events, FinTech events, market participants hold their own client events. You've got the big international circuit, of course. Then obviously there's the G20 and all those different international meetings that have really important ramifications for global finance. There must be a point at which you must think to yourself, okay, fine, we've got to shortlist the really important ones we have to attend.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about prioritizing. And of course, we all would like to have more resources to cover even more. And also the business is asking, could you please attend also that conference and send a report? Shouldn't we be present there? But then it's about prioritizing. And that is also an important task we have, prioritizing. Where do we need to be present? Which are the right channels to represent our interests? Where can we stay outside and do not be need to be present? Or where can we attend via webcast, for example? So that's also an important role we play.
I mean, that's an interesting one. Of course, Laura, I mean, you've had no choice, obviously, in your role. You've had to be visiting the markets. That's why we haven't had you on the podcast. I'm not hurt. I mean, we all missed you, but we know you have another important job to do. It's not just all about the podcast. But I mean, tell us, where have you been over the last few months? And just to give us an idea of how busy things have got.
Well, it's true that as you, Andrew, said, the possibility to attend meetings also now online makes our lives sometimes easier. But in some occasion, it's really important to be present and to be there discussing bilaterally with the authorities to take the most of those 2 hours that you will spend with them and to really get into the information and the concerns or the challenges you need to raise. Well, the visit has been, as you can imagine, in Frankfurt. It's a strong place of a big player. So we were able to visit at the same time several authorities, not only the ECB, also the European Systemic Risk Bank, the BaFin and Bundesbank. But at the end, all the authorities that are connected with us as ATR and receive our data. So even if we can discuss additional topics in a broader landscape, at the end we really focus and look into those topics that are more relevant and as Urs said, that the ones that we really need to prioritize. But I can make you a list of other places, but I would say in general, very interesting meeting with all the authorities and great exchange.
Six is in a fairly unique position, isn't it? Because it's a third country within Europe in its sort of relationship with the EU, but it's got very, very close ties and great integration there. Obviously, with the BME component, you're also within Europe with the CSD and all the benefits that brings six clients. What about the UK? I mean, what's been your view of Brexit? Give us a quick summary of your take on Brexit, how it's gone, and where it's left us now from a public affairs point of view.
Well, it made my life certainly more difficult. I must admit that. And the reason is the following. Until then, and let's take for a minute the Swiss perspective. Until Brexit, we had a strong focus on what's happening in the EU in terms of regulation, and we focused on that. And we also had to assess, do we need to take over certain parts for equivalence reasons or not? And that was the major part when it came to regulation from abroad. Nowadays, life is much more complicated. We have also the UK with its regulation that is deviating from the EU regulation. And we need to A, monitor both very closely, and then also assess, do we orient ourselves rather towards the EU because for equivalence reasons, for recognition reasons, or is it from a competitive angle more important to orient towards the UK, which has a huge capital market and is an important competitor. So that was one part why it became more complicated. Then the second was we had to what we called do a mind the gap strategy, so ensure that everything that worked well so far continues to work, even though the UK exited from the European Union. And then finally, and that is a very Swiss problem, so to say, we also have our topics with the European Union, and finding solution for Switzerland with the union became more difficult due to the Brexit, because the European Union assessed everything through the glasses of Brexit. So what if we find a solution with Switzerland, what does that mean in our relation with the UK? And as long that topic wasn't solved with the UK, it was very likely that we will not solve it for Switzerland as well. So that was really making our lives a bit harder than previously. But on the other hand, as public affairs is not only about risks, but also about chances and opportunities, of course, it gives also opportunities, because now you can ask yourself, what is better, and can we do perhaps something with the UK that we haven't been able to do with them so far because they were within the union. So that's then the positive side of the coin.
Of course, there's this sort of misconception, I think, for a lot of people who work in the finance industry, that it's the trading side of the business that really is the profit center, and compliance and PR and costs and HR and all those sort of ancillary functions, they used to be called somehow a cost center, and they're the costs of doing business. We've seen now, actually, that you ignore compliance at your peril because it's a key part of risk. Does the same thing apply to public affairs? I mean, it's not a cost center so much as a business optimizer. Is that the sort of way we should look at it in the modern world?
I think that is a fair assumption, that we are probably, we don't bring directly money, but we can optimize the way how we do business, and we can save costs. As I mentioned, horizon scanning and monitoring of upcoming and emerging regulation is an important part of our work. And by doing so, we do not only identify risks, but also opportunities, new business opportunities. And I think that is very important. And the other thing is identifying what's coming up, we also give them more time to adapt to new regulation and to implement it in a timely manner. And that also saves a lot of costs if you don't have to do it within a hurry, but can plan properly and execute properly and make use of the existing resources, for example, and do not need to hire additional staff because you're behind the curve.
I would see always a public affairs team as a team that look for synergies, not only between the financial market landscape, but also internally within a company. So I see very important the look of a public affairs team, because they can see where different entities within a company can work together and find common solutions. And synergies are always a profit. So this is not that much of a cost, but yeah.
Perhaps I can add one thing on that, and that is a part of the setup we chose for the public affairs and market structure team at SIX. We are, on the one hand, embedded in BXS and BSS with our team members, but on the other hand, based within the corporate functions, and that helps being close to the business and identify where are pain points, where are stumbling blocks. But on the other hand, having that broader overview from a corporate function view or perspective helps then to overcome the silos of the individual businesses. And I think that is quite a relevant part, having both within the team.
Oh, yes. That's the sound our regular listeners will know is the sound of the AI challenge coming. We have a slightly different one for you this week, because us and Lara, you're going to be judging each other here against ChatGPT. Now, what I did is I set up ChatGPT and I said, you are the head of public affairs for the SIX Group, and in particular with looking at regulatory compliance and markets. And it said, sure, as the head of public affairs for the SIX Group for regulatory compliance and markets, my primary responsibilities involve managing the company's reputation, handling media and public relations, and ensuring effective communications with various stakeholders, including government bodies. And I thought, well, ChatGPT, you are in the zone. So here's a challenge. Urs, I want you to, and we're going to put Laura to the test first. Laura, sorry. Okay. A public announcement. I want you to give a short public announcement on a new regulatory compliance. So a short public announcement on new regulatory compliance. Can you beat ChatGPT? So give us an idea. For example, there's a new regulatory platform, a guidance that's come out. You have to integrate into your platform. What do you say to the public when they ask the question?
So, dear stakeholders, we are pleased to announce the launch of this new service that will provide great benefits to our upcoming regulatory compliance activities.
Wow. Okay, that's very good. That's also actually, that's very close. That is very close to what ChatGPT said, I've got to say. It's raised its game. It said, we're pleased to inform our stakeholders. So we've got stakeholders in there. We're pleased to inform our stakeholders at the Six Group that we've successfully incorporated the latest regulatory guidelines into our platform. Our dedicated team has worked around the clock to ensure we meet and exceed the standards set forth, and we will continue to do so to provide the best experience for our users.
Okay, oh my God, that's so much better.
Now, is it or is it too salesy? You see, this is where I read that and I thought, oh, dude, you know what? You sound like you've been drinking the company Kool-Aid.
It was too much. In the first sentence, they will stop reading. So I think mine was quite better.
Okay, so let's put it to the vote. Urs, who wins? Is it Laura or ChatGPT?
I would fully go with Laura because it was too much marketing speech.
Once again, it's a win for Laura, and it's a... It's a sad trombone for ChatGPT. Okay, fine. We're going to do one more test. Urs, this is for you. Okay. it gave us several options here, but I am going to go for the toughest one I can find on my list. Okay, so you're going to announce a partnership with a new corporation, and it is a typical press release announcement with a new partner company who are going to be plugging in to one of your trading platforms.
Oh, that's a tough one because, of course, press releases are done by media relations and not me. So
okay.
But I'll try my best and at least try the beginning. But I would imagine that the AI will do better than I do. Six is very pleased to announce that we will cooperate as of next month with company XY, which will incorporate its services in our trading platform.
Okay, now that again, this is great stuff. It's surprisingly close. I think yours wins for one specific reason, but I'll read out what ChatGPT said. It said, today the Six Group is proud to announce, so very close, proud to announce a new partnership with XY Company to enhance the security and efficiency of our financial transaction platform. We believe that by combining our strengths, we can offer our clients a more seamless and secure experience. Now, once again, I think it's a bit on the salesy side, but what it didn't do is give us a date, and you gave us the date. And as we all know, and as I know as a journalist who's received lots of press releases over the years, the date is the only really thing that you really care about, because that decides whether or not it goes in the newspaper or not. So, Laura, you've got a vote now. Who wins on that one? Is it ChatGPT or Urs?
Totally agree with you, Andrew. Urs is winning this one.
It's another big win for the humans and sadly ChatGPT. I have to say close, but no cigar this time, ChatGPT, but well done. Okay, listen, so we have to start tying these threads together. We're coming towards the end of the show. But I think the question that I want to ask now, we do like us to sort of gaze into our crystal balls on the show and see if we can, you know, take a look towards the future. And, you know, we have a lot of challenges facing financial institutions. What's the advice you would give to market participants in the way that they engage with the public?
I'm always a bit reluctant with predictions that go beyond the next few weeks or months, because, as you said, these are unprecedented times we are living in, and the past few years have proved that disruptive events happen, and we haven't factored them in half a year before, and only shortly before they happened, we became aware of it. But if I had to mention a few topics that I personally will have high on my top list, I would certainly name AI and cybersecurity, sustainability, and also what's coming next in the EU after the elections, and certainly also the geopolitical developments. And why is this so? I mean, AI, cybersecurity, and sustainability will probably not surprise, as these are topics that are heavily discussed already today, and I don't think this will change anytime soon. The priorities of the European Commission and the European Parliament after the elections provides us with the opportunity to participate in shaping the future of our financial centers. And in my opinion, the next few years will be absolutely decisive for the competitiveness of European capital markets, but also for the transition to a sustainable future. And geopolitical developments will, at least in my humble opinion, continue to play a decisive role in the longer term regarding how the world develops in which we have to operate in. And thus, one is well advised to closely monitor what's happening and factor that in the next steps a company takes. I think that's what I would advise. Keep an even closer eye on geopolitical developments than you did before, and also have an eye on the emerging risks, because if the recent few years proved something, then it was, as I said, that can happen very, very fast, and you really need to be focused on that in order that you don't miss anything.
And also, I have a Swiss-specific question, because we know that the Swiss National Bank has been pioneering experiments with central bank-issued digital currency, or CBDCs, as we talk about them. And I couldn't let the future question go. I'm a bit of a nerd. We used to have a little cryptocurrency alarm that would go off on the show if I started talking about this, but Nick's not here, so he can't stop me. So I've got to ask the question, what about central bank-issued digital currencies, especially in the world of wholesale banking? Do you think that's something that's going to be on the horizon next year, or is it something that's going to be further down the line?
Well, we are doing an experiment with the Swiss National Bank together with SDX, our digital exchange. And I think that is an important step towards wholesale CBDC. Whether this will lead then to a permanent wholesale CBDC, I can't say. But I think that will wholesale CBDCs or CBDCs overall will be absolutely key for the adoption of digital assets in a broader sense. And therefore, I hope that it will be implemented, the sooner the better.
That's fantastic. And Lara, I have a future question for you, slightly nearer focus on this one. Next April, big changes in Europe because the ECMS, the European Collateral Management System, comes on stream for members of the euro, which means we could see a few changes in repo markets and reporting activity around SFTs and MiFID and that kind of stuff as, you know, money starts flowing while the central banks sort of taper all the asset purchasing programs, what have you, and we try and get markets moving again. That's a possibility. So we know April is going to be a busy time for the markets. We also know April is when EMIR refit's deadline hits. So the question I want to ask you is, are you going to be taking a holiday in April or are you going to be in the office 24/7? Which one do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be the second one. Although I'm planning a trip, it will be probably later. if we implement everything and the following few weeks everything is going smooth, I think it will be time for all the teams to get some rest. But of course, it's a mini refit, but 2024 is going to be a busy year for many other regulations, as Dora, as you know. So not many days of holidays, I assume, but...
Okay, good. Well, that's a positive outlook for the markets, less so for your suntan. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's a tough game working in institutional relations. And I guess that all that remains is for us to give a huge virtual studio thanks to our very special guests today. In no particular order, of course, our virtual crew member who is back after a long time on the road. And we're delighted to have you back here. Huge thanks to Lara Rodriguez. Lara, thank you so much.
Thank you, Imad, and you. Happy to be back, as always,
Imad. You know, it's great to have you back. And also, to bring with you such a special guest, Urs, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. I want to give a huge round of applause for Mr. Urs Reich, who is the head of Public Affairs and Markets at the Six Group. Urs, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure and was absolute fun to be on the show today.
That was great. Well, it's good to have you. So sadly, that's it. We have to go. We will be back with another episode of the Register Roundup. And remember, we've only got a few episodes left in season 8. It's season 8, is it? No, season 9.
Yep.
You see, I've been locked in this studio so long. I have to ask Liana, our producer, Liana Sudan. Hi. And thank you. Season 9. So season 10 will be coming to you soon. And also there'll be a very special podcast special coming from the Register Our Client event in October, which we're going to keep. Shh, now, you heard it here first. Little rumor. Keep your ears peeled in October for that. It's going to be a hot one. Lots of market participants and lots of interesting industry voices taking the temperature of the refit market, as well as the temperature of regulatory reporting across the UK and the EU. And in the meantime, from all of us, have a good few weeks, have a safe few weeks, and do remember to come and join us on our LinkedIn page. That is linkedin.com/company/regis-tr. And there you can catch up with me, you can catch up with Liana and suggest guests and topics for future shows. And of course, you can network with Lara and with Urs and connect with the rest of the crew and the Register Our team and download our booklets on the refit regulations, on how we can help. Contact us and also keep your eyes peeled, because coming out over the next few months, there will be some very, very useful videos on how to adapt to new reporting codes and how to use our systems and great new help support stuff with a very special host with a wonderful voice for radio, darling. Yes, it's me. I'm actually doing some voiceover stuff and you'll get to see my face too. Sadly, that may be a good thing or a bad thing. It depends. I'm going to say it might be NSFW. We'll have to find out. But in the meantime, from all of us here at the Six Group, thank you and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.